This is HPR episode 2422 entitled, Kickstarter Postmortem, and is part of the series, Tabletop Gaming. It is hosted by Klaatu, and is about 46 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Klaatu talks about his failed Kickstarter campaign.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everyone, this is Klaatu. You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. This is my post-mortem of a failed Kickstarter campaign. I think that post-mortems or debriefings, whatever you want to call them, are really valuable because we are, after all, supposed to learn from history or learn from our mistakes or whatever. And I think in the appropriately open source sort of model, I may as well share what I have learned, or at least what has happened, so that possibly you, if you're ever going to do a Kickstarter campaign, can learn from my mistake. Now, this, of course, assumes that I know what my mistake was, and while I have some theories, I can't obviously be sure what exactly my mistake was, so some of this advice might not even be useful, but anyway, that's what a postmortem is. It's not necessarily a diagnosis, it's just a review of what happened and sort of some theories on why it happened. So, in case you missed the episode in question, I think it was 2402. It's about a card game that I came up with that I call Petition. And the card game is, well, I mean, if you want to know more about the card game, just go listen to the episode. But the card game I designed many years ago now, no, not many years, like 2 years ago. And I playtested it, and it went really well, like everyone enjoyed it quite a lot, found some bugs, fixed the bugs, and so on. And so I finally figured that I finally felt that maybe it would be interesting to get some proper artwork done, because for my playtesting I had just grabbed some tarot card art from the internet, you know, and just kind of put them on the cards and kind of repurposed it and sort of designed a card game or made the tarot art fit my card game, and since it was a fantasy based card game, it was actually a pretty good match, to be honest. But I felt like it might be neat to have like really cool artwork, and I can do abstract, I can do gritty and ugly stuff, I can do various styles, and none of them evoke fantasy whatsoever. So I thought, well, it might be really cool to get someone who knows what they're doing to sit down and illustrate artwork for this game and really give it sort of an identity. And I mean, there are plenty of illustrators out there online who will sell you pictures or even do custom work for you. But I felt very strongly that if I was going to spend money on something that technically didn't really need money, I mean, it could, you know, the card game, it's a set of mechanics, and you could just play the game with clip art, you know, it would work. So I felt like if I was going to spend money on this thing, I would want to support, because the whole card game, obviously, maybe not obviously, but certainly, had been designed and created on open source, completely open source stack. So I felt like the artwork should also be created on open source. So I hunted down an illustrator who used nothing but open source. He's really quite a good illustrator. I contacted him through the Synfig Studio people, well, actually the Project Merevna people, but they seem to be doing most development on Synfig out of anyone. So I contacted them, they hooked me up with this one dude, and I pre-ordered some artwork for the card game, and paid him some upfront money, and really liked what I saw, so I thought, okay, I'm gonna do this Kickstarter campaign, and get people to contribute so that I can then pay the artist, and then we'll all have a game. And that seemed like a good idea to me. Now, it did not work. I was asking for 5,000 New Zealand dollars, which, if I do a quick calculation in my head, I'm gonna assume that that's about 2,500 US dollars. And I figured that would be enough. Well, I mean, I calculated that that would be enough to pay the artist for a full set of artwork that I would need, because I had obviously all the cards figured out, and I knew exactly what I would need. So I kind of felt like that would be enough to finance the whole thing. I didn't want to ask for, like, I don't know, 20 grand or 50 grand or something, and end up with a situation where I had to, send the artwork out to China for printing and then get boxes. And I didn't want to go into manufacturing. That was not my interest, and is not my interest. And I certainly didn't want to end up with a scenario where I had to have like 100 games shipped to me, and then I had to distribute them to local stores. That's not what I'm interested in. I don't want to become a game publisher or anything like that. I just wanted to create a game, pay for the art, and then do a print-on-demand service, preferably something that's more or less local. I couldn't find a super dedicated print-on-demand place in New Zealand, but I know of a couple in the US, and so I figured that was pretty good. So yeah, so I, that was my plan. Now, as I've said, none of this worked, but what did happen was that I sat down and took a bunch of the graphics that the illustrator had sent me and kind of made up a really nice looking Kickstarter campaign. And I did some research on what other people do and what a good Kickstarter campaign looks like. And certainly in terms of Kickstarter, I'm no stranger. I think I've backed something like 33 or 35 projects. So I've gone through quite a few Kickstarter campaigns as a user. And that was good, and I felt like I did some research on what Kickstarter, sort of what the masses expect from a Kickstarter campaign. So I kind of slapped something together that sort of approximated what everyone else was doing. I like to think I put my own spin on it. Everyone was saying that a Kickstarter needs a video. You gotta have a video. So I did this little 1 minute video on an animated video that I did in SynFig, and just had like a little bit of a sort of a presentation, just kind of like, this is what the game, these are what some of the cards look like, this is what the game is about, hey, you should finance this game. And Kickstarter gives you a whole bunch of metrics on the back end. So if you ever do a Kickstarter campaign, you will find that you have a lot of information. And I could have even gotten more if I'd tied it, as from what I understand, I could have tied it into like a Google tracking account or whatever they're called, like a Google, a Google, what do you call it? A Google tracker or a Google Analytics, that's what it is. Google Analytics account, and then I think I would have gotten even more data, but I really can't be bothered with that sort of thing. Not really. Yeah, I don't really need that kind of data, I don't think. I mean, who knows? Maybe this is part of the problem. Oh, look at that. I'm actually looking at my Kickstarter page now, and someone just gave me more money. That's pretty funny. I mean, 44 more hours to go as of this recording. So I guess technically this hasn't failed yet, but it is kind of funny. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that you get a lot of data on the reporting side of Kickstarter when you create a campaign. And one of the things that you get is the amount of video plays that, of people who come to your page. And you even kind of get where they're coming from. So I'll talk about that in a moment, but one of the things that I did get data on was the video plays. There were 307 video plays, and 55.05% of them actually completed the plays, which I felt was kind of interesting, because the video, like I say, it is literally, I can tell you, I mean, I think it's a minute, I keep wanting to say. Yeah, it's under a minute. It is 42 seconds long. So for 55% of the plays, only 55% of the hits to actually finish was a little bit honestly surprising. I felt like a commercial length video, you know, like 30 seconds. Okay, it's 42 seconds, whatever. I thought that that would really sort of be the average consumer attention span. And apparently it was only half of the average consumer attention span. And by half, I mean 153. Because, as I say, there were 308. Oh, that's because I just clicked on it. 307 plays, 55% completed. So that was interesting. Okay, anyway, so I did that. I threw the video on. I put all the text in there, told people what they were funding and why I needed the money and stuff like that. And I felt like I needed to justify having the money, and maybe I was wrong about that. Because after all, I think there is, I mean, if it's on Kickstarter, there is an expectation that apparently you think you need money for something. So maybe, you know, people on Kickstarter, maybe they don't need to be convinced that you need money. I don't know. I tend to need to be convinced that that project needs money. So I felt this burden to really tell people that I needed money. And maybe I was wrong to do that. Maybe people were already sold on the idea that I was asking for money because I was on Kickstarter, and so maybe I wasted too much time with that. And what I did leave out, and this is something that's probably the top, this is the top thing on my list of where did I go wrong. The top item, and I'll just actually quote this person. It's from Hacker Public Radio itself on episode 2402. In a comment by listener named McNalu, McNalu. And McNalu says, I'm cutting off most of the comment, and I'm getting to the meat of it. It says, I love the, that's a pun, by the way. You can actually read the comment and find out why. I love the idea of your game and will give it serious consideration, to the Kickstarter. Any chance of a summary or audio or even video of an actual game? And that's the key right there, my friends. I think, and obviously this is very, probably very specific to a Kickstarter that is financing a game, but the mechanics just weren't anywhere on the Kickstarter. And I got feedback here on McNalu saying that, from McNalu saying, hey, some gameplay would be really cool to see. And then later I got some feedback in person from someone who said that their friend had not contributed to the project because specifically the game mechanics weren't sort of spelled out in the description or in the video or anywhere, that it just wasn't there. And I heard that, the criticism, twice, so that obviously means that it's, I mean, if I'm hearing it once, that means other people are thinking about it. If I'm hearing it twice, that means a lot of people are thinking about it. So I kind of thought, well, I really should put the game mechanics up there. But by the time all of this sort of happened, the numbers were looking pretty low anyway, and I felt, well, I don't think I'm going to make this Kickstarter goal. And that didn't stop me. I did. I typed up a whole update on the gameplay, and then I thought, oh my gosh, if I just do an update, people aren't going to see that. They're just going to see the campaign text. So then I thought, well, I should really put the campaign text in there. And then apparently I'm a perfectionist, and it took me so long to... I went back to the manual, the game manual that I designed in Scribus, and I wanted to put that in the campaign. And I just kind of kept going back and forth on the best presentation and all this other stuff, and I ended up, you know, by the last week, I hadn't put the game mechanics in there, and it just seemed a little bit silly to bother at that point. So I think I feel like if there was one thing I would really, really do differently if I had to go back, it would have been to really, really lessen the detail, the gory detail on why I needed the money, and just really concentrate on exactly what people were purchasing. And I think right there, if you take one thing away from this episode and you're going to go do your own Kickstarter campaign, my money would be on that right there, is that you don't have to sell people on Kickstarter the fact that you need money, and you don't have to tell them necessarily a whole bunch of why you need the money. I mean, you probably ought to mention it, I imagine, but I don't think you really need to tell them, like, line item by line item, this is how the money's going to get spent, and this is why I'm doing this. Just, tell them about the actual product. So essentially, I think on Kickstarter, rather than explaining the project, it's more like you want to hand them the back of the box before it's off to the printer, like the thing that they're going to turn around and look at when they're in the fake store that they're not going to be in, when they're going to not buy your project or buy your product. So give them the blurb of, oh my gosh, you're going to have so much fun with this thing, and here's why. And that's what you're really selling them in the end. And I didn't do that. So number one problem, that right there. In my opinion, of course, I don't know. This is a failed Kickstarter campaign, so I might be analyzing this incorrectly. That's my bet, though. So the next thing that I kind of thought about as I kind of sort of pondered the failure in my head, and I'm saying failure a lot, and it almost seems like that's usually a very negative term, but understand that this was more of an experiment for me because I really don't need the money, and I'll go into exactly why I say that later, but this was more of a nice to have rather than a need to have. So the fact that I tried it and it failed is more of an academic issue to me. It's kind of something that I'm looking at and just sort of having fun analyzing, really, rather than thinking, this is horrible. Why does this sort of thing happen to me? I don't care that much. So the second thing that I kind of really thought about how the campaign did not succeed, it's a more positive spin on it, was this whole crowdfunding concept. And I mean, like I said, I've kickstarted a lot of things, but I will say that a lot of the things that I've kickstarted have been very successful things. So, like, they've been Linux video games, or they've been Mystery Science Theater 3000 Revival, or weird little things like that, that generally speaking, not always, there were some that just made their goal, but a lot of times I was just jumping on board something that was already really well funded, and so I didn't really have a concept of how many people were funding, for instance, at a $1,000 level versus a $1 level. And so in my mind, Kickstarter, at least certainly when it had first come out, like back in, I don't really remember, but let's just randomly say 2009. Back when it first came out, when I first heard about it, at least, the idea was that it was crowdfunding. That was the big term that, and I guess it is still a term that people use, but crowdfunding to me meant that you sort of put you pitch a thing to the internet, and lots of people, I'm talking about 1,500 people, 2,500 people, more maybe, 5,000 people, they throw like a dollar at you. And because all those people threw $1 at you, you now have $5,000. Or they throw 50 cents at you, and now you have 5,000 New Zealand dollars. So that was crowdfunding to me. So I kind of kept thinking that people were going to jump on this sort of $2, $3 pledge level that I had set up, because in my mind that was what crowdfunding was. Lots of little donations. Now, I think in the life of Kickstarter, the way that it has kind of ended up being, and it's probably out of the scope of this analysis to really talk a whole lot about why it developed this way. I'll say briefly that I think it's because a lot of companies started using Kickstarter as basically a marketing scheme, kind of like, hey, we've made this product. It's ready to go. Let's sell it on Kickstarter. So it's rather than being like your prototype financing stop. It's you've already prototyped, you've got your final product, all you need are the orders to so that you can ship your product. And I realize that doesn't happen all the time, but I do think that it does happen. And even if it doesn't happen directly like that, I think there are a lot of companies out there who just kind of know that Kickstarter is their pre-order system. So even if they haven't made the product, they know that if they get those pre-orders on Kickstarter, then they have financed this project, and so they pull the trigger once they meet their goal on Kickstarter. And that's a little bit different than what I was doing. I had a project, I had the prototype all done, and I wanted the financing to go from prototype to, hey, you can buy this thing. So I feel, in other words, that a lot of people may come to Kickstarter, and I think I'm probably guilty of this myself. I think a lot of people come to Kickstarter sort of thinking, okay, cool, what's my reward? And I mean, it's built into Kickstarter. That's part of what Kickstarter is. It's rewards, especially if there's a physical product involved. You go to Kickstarter to get the physical product, which is different. That's the store. It's a store mentality. You're going to a store to buy a thing. So you go to Kickstarter and you buy a thing, and there's just this weird delay between when you pay for it and when it actually ships. And hopefully that's not discouraging other things that don't actually have a whole lot of physical evidence that they've been done, at least not something that you can necessarily get. Because I remember early in Kickstarter, you would have artists financing, shows and stuff that if you're in New York and they're in California, you're not going to get to their gallery opening. You're never going to see their gallery. But you financed it because it sounded like a cool project and you like their other stuff. So, yeah, there's a little bit of a difference there, and I'm not sure how rampant it is, and it might even be something within certain disciplines. So, for instance, one of the things that I had kickstarted once was a trip for a singer, this fantastic jazz singer that I really, really like. Jazz is actually almost saying, it's more like cabaret or something. It's really freaky, strange, trippy jazz, and I really like her work, so I financed this trip that she was going to make to Europe, and she was going to have someone following her around with a camera, and ostensibly they were going to sort of do like a documentary or something, and I don't really know whatever came of that, and yeah, it was, I think, and it got funded, and I don't know how many people who financed the thing were necessarily financing it because they were expecting a physical object in the mail. It wasn't like a mail order thing. It was just like, oh, I love your art, and you're doing this other art thing, so here's some money to finance that. And maybe that's more frequent within the arts than it is in, for instance, something like whatever little niche the gaming community has carved out for itself in Kickstarter, where there is an expectation, certainly, of well, I'm purchasing a game, so eventually I want the game. Like, that's part of the deal, right? So quite possibly, in other words, by going to Kickstarter with a game, I was targeting an audience that had an expectation of getting a game in the end, meaning, therefore, that their pledge level was kind of locked in, and this bears itself out in my data. If I go to the backer report, I see that, like, as of this recording, I have 17 backers, and of those backers, all but five of them were backing at the level where you would get a game at the end of it. So, what's that? Less than a third chose the smaller options for this project, meaning that two-thirds of them were essentially pre-ordering a game. So I don't know what crowdfunding exactly really means. Maybe it never meant what I thought it meant. But I kind of feel like crowdfunding, and maybe crowdfunding is maybe, 'cause if it's a crowd, it's in a confined area, right? I still, in my mind, I'm thinking this isn't crowdfunding anymore, it's flash mob funding. It's kind of like you get a bunch of people together and get them excited about a product and make sure that they throw some set amount of money, and the money must equal, you have to look at the size of your crowd, and then you have to adjust the money expected from them such that you meet your funding goal. Whereas I feel that, crowdfunding or something else, populace funding maybe, would have been to me like you throw a net out and you hit like 5,000 people and you get those sort of $2 contributions, and you just get a bunch of those, and then you've got your financing. And I don't know if that would work. I'm not proposing an economic solution here to anything. I'm just saying that I think I fundamentally misunderstood how Kickstarter finance mentality sort of went. And again, this is a little bit odd because if you look at my history on Kickstarter personally, I really do. I tend towards exactly what I'm saying. Like I am all the proof that you need, really, of how Kickstarter, of how certainly an average Kickstarter person might think. Like almost every project I've ever backed, not all of them, but most of them certainly have resulted in some kind of thing at the end. Actually, you know what? I'm actually lying to you a little bit, because I just kind of randomly clicked on my backer history. And it probably still is most, but it might not be all. I've actually funded my fair share of things that would not render anything in return. That were they're just. Oh, I just clicked the more button. No, okay. So I definitely have clicked more towards the yes, I will get something at the end of this Kickstarter than I have the things that sort of don't give me anything in return. I mean, a lot of, and I say that, I mean, I don't get the central thing, So there have been some RPG rule books that I've financed, and there was no way, I wasn't going to get the rule book at the end of the thing. It just wouldn't have, that's not at a $5 pledge, $5, $12, $17, $18, $10, $1. That was a technology book. $2. Yeah, there's been actually quite a few things that I have just thrown small amounts of money, and maybe that is, after all, why I was wrong. Maybe I was incorrect about the perception. Maybe I did perceive that there was a healthy market for those small donations, and I guess that does bear out in my offer, in the rewards that I'm offering, that I offered in the campaign. I set the lowest contribution to $3, and then I had a $5 level, and then I had an $11 level, and finally I went up to like a $31 level, which I think with shipping it had to be a little bit more. But anyway, there was like the I definitely was lowballing the potential for contribution. I mean, I did have some fairly high contribution levels, and amazingly, someone actually took me up on one of them. There was a $150 level, and someone actually did pledge at that level, which I find amazing. Thank you, Murph, I think is what the username was. But anyway, yeah, I feel like I didn't go in understanding the nature of my potential investors. And I don't know the answer to how to find that sort of thing out. I honestly don't. And I do suspect, as I said, I do suspect that it will change depending on what you're pitching to your investors. If you're pitching something fairly esoteric, maybe that'll be something that you will get smaller amounts for. Like, oh, I'll send this person a buck or two. I mean, yeah, I won't get anything out of it, but I'll feel good about donating. versus, hey, I'm pitching something that you're going to hold in your hand at some point, but in order for you to get it, it's going to be $40. Then maybe you need to go lighter on the tiny donations, on the micro donations or micro pledges, whatever, and sort of be biased towards like the 40, 50, 60, 70, $80 kind of reward tiers where you give people things, based on, hey, you've given 40 to get a copy of the thing, but if you do 50, you'll get a copy of the thing and you'll get, something else. So yeah, that sort of thing. And I guess that would be one more. So that's my second thing is not understanding, not having a good grasp on crowd, the concept of crowdfunding. And then the third thing that I believe I might have gone wrong on is the possibility that I don't really know. I didn't really have a good handle on the rewards. I felt like I did, but I don't think I did. Like the first couple of tiers, like I say, were way under, I was lowballing the donation tiers anyway. So the lower ones were just sort of like, yeah, you'll get your name on the credits or the in the blurb, and I think that's it. And then finally, at one point, you get the game. No, at one lower point, you get some PDFs that I'd send you, which, big deal, PDFs. And then you get the game, and then above that, you start to get to actually contribute stuff into the game. Like you can name one of the gods, or you can name one of the plagues, or the power-ups, and so on. So I kind of felt like, I don't know, I felt they were vaguely attractive. I mean, I didn't think they were like amazing, but at the same time, I didn't want to overcommit either, so I didn't want to do anything too crazy. At one point, I thought, and I think I did end up adding it. I thought, well, maybe I could offer to host a game, a session of like an RPG over Mumble or something, and maybe people would be into that, because I don't know, people like personal connection. So yeah, I kind of thought maybe I'll do that. No one took me up on that anyway, so it didn't really end up mattering all that much. And besides that, this is a card game, and I was offering sort of like as one of the rewards a completely unrelated tabletop RPG session, so it's I don't know. I don't feel like my rewards were necessarily the most amazing sort of rewards, and maybe someone with better marketing sense could have come up with something a little bit more consistent in theme. I don't know. So that's the third thing, is the rewards question mark. And then the fourth and final thing, I think, is just going to be an acknowledgement that I'm really not interested in marketing. I don't like marketing. I don't like to think about marketing. I don't like to try to sell things. I'm not good at selling things. So I think that this Kickstarter kind of, in a way bears that out. It's I don't know how to get a lot of people to do something. That's just not a skill that I've ever had. I can get a couple of people sometimes to do something. Or you know what, I can do something, and then sometimes a couple of people are kind enough to jump on board with me. That's generally how it goes, because I don't do a whole lot of outreach for anything. And I feel like for Petition, I wrote an article online about the card game itself, but I wasn't permitted in that article to point back to the Kickstarter. So as marketing goes, that's probably not, amazing. I think I had already walked away from most social media around the same time that the Petition Kickstarter went live. So I basically broadcast the Kickstarter to Mastodon, which is the open source federated implementation of GNU Social. And then I think I did, well, I did the Hacker Public Radio episode, which you may or may not have heard, and yeah, who knows how that did. I don't think, like, in my little backer report, if I look at the dashboard, it does not appear that people came to this. I mean, and I guess they have to click through probably, but they didn't appear doesn't appear that people came to this page directly from Hacker Public Radio. And again, that could be false, that could be wrong, that could be incorrect. I don't know. But there you go. So I did that, and then I think finally maybe the other thing that I did was went to conferences locally. I went to some local game conferences that just happened to be around this time. There was an RPG conference and a tabletop game conference. So those two things I attended and talked about my game some. And again, I'm really, really bad about doing outreach and marketing and selling. So I did what I could, but honestly, not a whole lot. And I didn't even have like business cards printed out with the Kickstarter on it. I just kept telling people the name, and I just kind of thought, well, they'll just search for it on Kickstarter, right? And some did actually. I got a couple of people who did follow on from those conferences. I don't know exactly how many, because I mean some of these names I just don't recognize. But there's one on there that I definitely know because I played Shadowrun with him, and so I know his name quite well now. Never met him before, but now I know him. And he popped up like a day after the RPG conference. So yeah, poor marketing skills, I think, would be my fourth thing. And I think that's probably kind of an illusion of the internet, unfortunately. And I feel it's an illusion that I'm okay not sort of not falling for. And it's this illusion that things on the internet become a thing sort of just by being on the internet. And you can argue that there are plenty of cases where that actually is a thing. Like someone just threw something online and then, oops, overnight it became like this huge thing, and look at that, they're super popular now, or they're super internet rich or internet famous or whatever. I don't know. I just don't think that happens. I think that behind the scenes, and maybe it's just a conspiracy theorist in me, but I think that behind the scenes, when something gets really big on the internet, it's because people are working really hard to make sure that it gets really big on the internet. And I say this knowing that there, you know, especially back in the days, and I guess it's still a thing, but there was that time when viral video, like everyone would always talk about, oh my gosh, it's gone viral, and that was the thing, and it was a lot of people's goals. And I knew a marketing person in Los Angeles personally, who, well, I knew him because I had hired him at one point for a company that I worked with. I didn't personally hire him, but he got hired, and he was doing the marketing for this thing, and one of his goals was to make it go viral, and that's what he did. Like that was one of his major things, was he specialized in two things, and that was making things go viral on the internet and making things go viral at film festivals, like trying to get people to purchase little indie films and turn them into big indie films from film festivals. That was all he did, and he just had the proverbial black book of contacts who he would call and just talk up this property, and you know, just like, you've got to get on this, you got to look at this. If you don't like it, let me know, I'll call someone else. You know, it's just like just endless harping on people, and just driving it, driving it, driving it until it starts to catch. So in that vein, I did get several emails and several messages on Kickstarter as well from people who were with Kickstarter promotional companies, and they would say things like, your Kickstarter was really great. Send me, you know, if you want to partner with us, we will make sure that, you know, we will search engine optimize this and make sure that it gets promoted on Kickstarter, and you know, all of the Kickstarter projects that we do are 70% successful, or you know, whatever. And I could have gone that way. I could have spent $50 here, $50 there, $200 there, to have someone out in the internet supposedly do some magical optimizations and pull some strings and, you know, make this thing get big, And I just didn't want to do that. I just felt like if that's what it takes to be a successful Kickstarter on the internet, then I just don't really want to be a successful Kickstarter project on the internet. And you know what? I got my wish. I was not a successful Kickstarter thing on the internet, and I am so happy about that. So that's everything that I know about Kickstarter campaigns and how not to get them funded. So hopefully you'll learn from my mistake if you are someone who wants to do a Kickstarter on the internet that actually gets funded. Then yeah, maybe sort of take everything that I did and sort of do it the opposite way and see how you go. It might work out for you. Might not. Like I say, a lot of this is just raw data. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know how to necessarily interpret it. It's the thing this is the information that I have. So one last thing, and that is sort of not about Kickstarter and more about just kind of like my project. I do have a plan B, happily. I decided, well, early on when I was doing this card game, my first idea was that I would just work and spend money on getting the art done. And so the only reason I went to Kickstarter at all was the idea that maybe I could speed that up. Sort of the whole strength in numbers type of thing. Like if I get this out there and get a bunch of people to contribute some money, then the art will get financed. So Kickstarter was my plan B. So now that Kickstarter's kind of fallen through for me, I'm just reverting to plan A. So it's not, I don't view any of this, as I said, as a failure. I view it as something that I tried, something that didn't work, and now something that I will do anyway. So my plan is, or what I've been working on is that I'm picking up some systems administration gigs, little jobs on the side, to get paid extra money outside of my allotted budget for frivolity. And also I am going to be writing some articles for an online magazine type thing that actually pays money. So I'll be doing that for a little bit. And between the income, the extra income from those two things, I'm gonna pay the artist, and then the game will be done, and I expect it will be done by Christmas. So, whether you are interested in the game or not, it will exist at some point in the future, and if you are interested in it, then you can go to the Game Crafter. .com/games/petition. So that again is thegamecrafter.com/games/petition. Now it is not actually for sale yet, but eventually it will be, and it'll be probably, by my calculations, $17. It might be a little bit more depending on how exactly, how much money I actually end up spending on the various components of it. But that's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting about $17, and it'll be something that you can purchase, and they will print up on demand and send it to you. Now, there won't be a box and stuff like that. It's going to come with the cards, which I imagine will be shrink wrapped or something. I don't know. I've never purchased anything from them yet. And then a small collection of tokens, little glass tokens with the prayer beads in the game. If you've listened to the gameplay, and that's it. So like I say, I'm not really interested. Oh, and a manual. But I'm also going to do a video on how to play the game. So. People won't have to read the manual. Although, if I do say so myself, the manual's quite easy to follow. It's lots of big words, big writing, lots of pictures, and it's not very long. So I think ideally it will be really easy to learn how to play. You will be able to play it, and it will be a reasonable price, I reckon. Not a whole lot of control over that because there's a bunch of custom stuff that I have to kind of do for it. which drives up the price a little bit. You know, things like, oh, certain cards have to have different backings on them than the other cards. And yeah, you kind of do need the tokens in order to be able to play it. So yeah, there's some stuff that kind of control the price point. But I think 17 is what it will cost to print, or that's, I think, 5 cents more than what it'll cost to print. So it'll be available. And then the whole thing, like I say, is Creative Commons open source. So if you don't want to have to spend any money on it at all, you can always go to my GitLab.com account and find petition there, and it's pretty much all the assets will end up there anyway. So not really a big deal. You could print and play at home, or do whatever you want. You could make it into a video game, for all I care. Anyway, that's Kickstarter for you, and a little update on the game that I made, and I hope you've learned something. I sure did. Talk to you later.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.
It smells really good.